Good morning, Oregon, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Every weekday, this podcast brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History Syndicated newspaper column. Full details of that are at offbeatoregon.com. Do check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of how the Oregon years and the Oregon flour mills helped Herbert Hoover preventing mass starvation. You might have caught our earlier episode on Hoover, just kind of in general, one of the 20th century's most reviled presidents who actually saved millions of people from starving to death and grew up in Oregon. His name's on the title deed for the Boston Flouring Mills, and he brought that mill a ton of business in the process of preventing famine in Eastern Europe. The story was first published long, long ago on May 19th, 2009. I'm going to read it to you now. Between the tiny Oregon town of Shedd and Interstate 5 Freeway, there's an old flour mill, the oldest water-powered grist mill in the state, and one of only four remaining. It's called Boston Flouring Mills, and it's also known as Thompson's Mills after a former owner. It sits over the Kalapuya River where it snakes across the valley floor. Should you visit the mill, staff members there will proudly call your attention to a signature on a land sale deed dating from 1891. It's the signature of one of the two witnesses required for the sale, and its legality is a bit questionable, because, you know, the signer was still a minor. It was a 17-year-old office boy at the Oregon Land Company, which sold the mill, or rather acted as sort of the real estate agency for the mill. The signature on the bill was Bert Hoover. Not many people know it, but Bert, known when he was even younger as Bertie Hoover and when older as Herbert Hoover, spent most of his teenage years in the Willamette Valley. Although, of course, if you've been listening to this podcast for a little while, you know it. And you'll also know that after the death of his parents, he arrived here in Oregon when he was 11 to live with his uncle, John Minthorn, in Newburgh. A few years later, the Minthorns moved to Salem to launch the Oregon Land Company. Ironically enough, you would never know that to look around Salem today. The house that they lived in is still in use as a private residence and has been remodeled into unrecognizability, and the office in which Hoover worked is, I understand, part of the Union Gospel Mission. But I'm told that his initials are actually carved into the wall at Boone's Treasury, the McMenamins Brothers restaurant and public house there on Liberty Street. But I digress. Hoover was 17 when he went off to college, becoming a member of the first class at Stanford University. Leland Stanford Junior University, which was definitely not a junior university. It was named after a guy named Leland Stanford Jr. A few years later, he participated in that famous college's first ever graduation ceremony and set out into the world armed with a geology degree and a net worth of $40, looking every inch the world beater than he was. He'd never again signed his name Bert on any legal document, and he'd never come back to Oregon to live either. 20 years later, though, Hoover played an even bigger role in Boston Mill. He brought it business. Lots of business. The place was running 24 hours a day. The reason? Well, people were starving in war-torn Europe. By this time, Hoover had taken his $40 and turned it into millions. He was the most highly paid engineer in the world, and he was at the peak of his career. But when the war broke out, Hoover dropped his career and launched himself on a mission to feed the hungry in the war zones of Belgium and northern France, where millions would have starved without his intervention because the warring parties were squabbling over whose responsibility it was to feed them. When the U.S. entered the war, he took over as a sort of domestic food czar, using public relations tools to get folks to substitute corn and oats and barley for more nutrient-dense foods like wheat and beef that could be sent overseas, and were being sent overseas, fast and furious, from the Boston Mill and other places. After the war, he spearheaded efforts that saved millions all over Europe, but especially in the defeated German and Austrian lands in Russia, from starving. Throughout that time, of course, Hoover needed the Boston Mill to produce as much flour as it possibly could. And that's just what it did, and virtually every other mill like it across the country, too. By the end of it all, Hoover had prevented the miserable death by hundreds of millions of people. It was this success that would propel him to his ill-starred term as president a decade later, which, unfortunately, is what he's chiefly remembered for today. But it's worth remembering that had Hoover not grown up in Oregon, he probably would not have gone to Stanford, and without going to Stanford, he probably would not have become an engineer, and without becoming an engineer, he probably wouldn't have had the skills to direct the biggest humanitarian relief effort in human history. Looked at that way, Oregon is on the team that saved possibly over a billion people from starving to death. Kind of cool to think about. That's it for today's episode. If you're listening for the first time or something like that, would like some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get all of that at our website at offbeatoregon.com. Complete listing of the 202 columns that are currently in the archive, plus links out to the audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and there's also a link out to the Facebook page and Twitter feed in case you'd like to join this conversation. The website's also where you'll find the full citations to sources for this story, which include works by Lee Nash and Herbert Hoover himself, plus a personal visit to the Boston Flouring Mill, which is not far from my house. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, written by Carmen Ficarra. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Coming to Corvallis, drop me a line and let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. In fact, drop me a line anyway. I'd love to hear from you. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com or on Twitter at @offbeatoregon. That's it for today. And tomorrow, coming up, we're going to talk about Rajneeshpuram. This is going to be part 3 in our 4-part series about the place. This is going to be the end game. This is how Rajneeshpuram crumbled from within after well-publicized attempts to take over local governments, including, by the way, the biggest biological warfare attack in U.S. history. So look for the story on that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. In the meantime, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.